Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, welcome back to Paris, everyone, and to Tennis Podcast Towers Paris, where you find myself, David, and Matt, and we've been doing very French things, David, haven't we?
Yeah, I had Boeuf Bourguignon last night. We've been drinking wine. We've been watching a young French hope that I predicted would win Lyon, and he's into the final. It's all happening.
Yeah, it might be time to finalise what we call French players doing well in France.
Mousquetaire.
It is Mousquetaire, is
has
it?
To be
that
Mousquetaire.
Is decided. Well, yeah. We've been watching a Mousquetaire.
Yeah. Mm. I was ready to potentially start calling this a crowning for Artifice in Lyon because he hadn't actually had to win too many matches to get through to the semi-finals. He had a default and then he had a withdrawal. Suddenly he's in the semis, but I feel like he's earned his stripes in that semi-final because he quite literally had to win the match twice.
Yeah, it's made up for his route through.
It was... It was like that match you and I played against one another at the Royal Albert Hall, David.
2014.
Except it wasn't an umpire insisting that we continue playing.
Yeah.
It was David himself.
Did you fall on your back in celebration?
No. And you know what? If you're going to do a cancelled celebration, clay is the absolute worst surface to do that on because poor old Artifice had to play the remainder of the match, pick himself up, play a match tiebreak, deciding set tiebreak, with the physical evidence of his lost win all over his body. It was quite an extraordinary sight, wasn't it? And I don't know, not on its own, but moments like that could be the making of him.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I think that sounds quite premature, but at the same time, it was a heck of a feat
You're telling me I'm being premature about Arthur. We're recording this podcast late because you insisted on watching
David,
it.
David was live streaming the match as we walked back from Roland Garros. We had to sort of help him across the road because he was had his face in his phone watching tennis TV.
It's normal behaviour. But I mean, I do think it's a great sign. I do agree with you. If you can play that well and literally celebrate on your back, Nadal winning French Open style, and then be told, no, the ball was out, you've got to start again,
And not the ball was out, you're replaying the point. Your ball was out, I'm giving the point to Brandon Nakashima, and it's now back to deuce. It's not much point anymore. I was hugely impressed that he picked himself up from that. I mean, me of now would not recover from that, let alone me aged 18. Is he 18 or 19?
To be fair, Catherine,
18.
You did recover from the replayed point in 2014 at the Royal Albert Hall, and you did beat me.
Quality of opposition is a factor there, though, isn't it?
It's a bit harsh. Actually, it's not.
It's entirely accurate.
I did roll one into the bottom of the net to hand you the victory.
It was great. It was absolutely great. Look, so that's Artifice through to the final in Lyon, where he will face Francisco Cerúndolo, who absolutely thrashed Cameron Norrie earlier on today. Norrie appeared not to be looking quite right physically, so we'll see when he arrives in Paris what's going on with him. So that's the Lyon final. There's also tournaments going on in Geneva, where Casper Ruud let me down. He's lost to Nicholas Jarry.
Yeah, and Nicholas Jarry has backed that up. He's beaten Alexander Zverev.
No way, really?
7-6, 6-3. And he now faces Grigor Dimitrov, who apparently, and this blew my mind when David told me this.
I'm having a good week.
Is playing his first final for over 5 years since Rotterdam 2018. I mean, what has Grigor Dimitrov been doing?
I should add, I haven't verified that.
I have.
You have?
Yeah.
So I was right all along. Oh, good.
As I said, when David declared this stat, when we do Grigor Dimitrov relived during the next pandemic, Matt won't have to do any research. Because it's all there. It's all in the old David Law Mind Palace, isn't
it? It's 90s level knowledge.
So that's the final that's set up in Geneva. I'm going through this now because I feel like the next time we record a podcast will be day one of Roland Garros, and there'll be so much to mention. Look, we'll tell you who won these various tournaments, but I doubt we'll have opportunity to do much more than that. We have the tournament happening on the WTA event in Rabat, Morocco. The final there is Julia Grabher against Lucia Bronzetti.
And Bronzetti is the first round opponent of Ons Jabeur at Roland Garros.
Interesting. And more on Ons Jabeur shortly, because she was one of the players that came through Media Day today, which will be the bulk of our discussion for this podcast. Julia Grabher, I commentated on during the Australian Open earlier this year, losing to Annette Contaveit. And I wasn't impressed by her, but I could see that she had a game that was purely designed to work on clay and nowhere else. She is coached by Gunter Bresnik, of course, formerly of Thomas Muster and Dominic Thiem. And, you know, he crafts these incredible physical specimens, and she sure is one of those. So Julia Grabher and Lucia Bronzetti in the Rabat final. And in Strasbourg, we have Elina Svitolina.
Oh, wow.
Against Anna Blinkova in the final. What a story that is.
And Elina Svitolina recently off maternity leave. We haven't seen her play since. I mean, when did she come?
She made her return in Charleston.
Right.
So and I saw her in the French Open draw yesterday. I'm not sure she'd won a match before Strasbourg. But she certainly made her return in Charleston. So that's an incredible story. She was a wild card. She beat Clara Burel in the semi-final, and she'll play in the final tomorrow. So we'll And Matt, are you just verifying that stat that I just...
No, I was just looking up her French Open draw.
Oh, yeah?
She's got Trevisan in the first round.
Tricky.
Definitely tricky.
Who is more likely to win their first round, Gael Monfils or Elina Svitolina?
Svitolina. I don't even know who Monfils is playing.
But I remember we murmured to one another yesterday about Monfils losing to whoever he's got in the first round.
Yeah, I just...
Sebastian Baez.
Yeah, that's a good clay court player. Now, if he were playing against Daniil Medvedev, he's somebody, I think, who the type that would cause Medvedev problems as a proper clay courter. You know, somebody really rips the ball with loads of topspin.
Just confirming that the stat that I came out with was indeed absolutely false. Depending on how we're interpreting things, it's her first tour level match wins since coming back, but she did reach the semi-final of the WTA 125k event in Saint-Malo that was won by Sloane Stephens. She lost to Sloane Stephens in the semi-final, so there we go.
I think you deserve to be let off the hook.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate that. So, on to Media Day. Seeing as Ons Jabeur has had a mention, let's start with the women. Well, let's start with fronting up and saying, not an epic Media Day?
No. It's been a bit flat, really.
Bit snoozy. I thought so.
Who did it start with today? Who was the first one in?
Caroline Garcia.
Yeah. It wasn't.
I would put her in the snoozy bracket, I'm afraid.
What do we put it down to? Is it just, you know, sometimes they're going to be better than others and we shouldn't look too much into this? Or is there something missing? Is it just, you know, we're all getting used to a Nadal-less French Open and that's going to feel weird?
I mean, what is it? It's about 10 players that came in to the main interview room to speak to the assembled media. And we're not entirely sure what the rules are on when you have to come in and what ranking you have to be. At least I'm not entirely sure. And then you get to ask individually, don't you? If there's somebody who's not on the list, you can ask for them and hopefully they'll be given... brought in as well. But I think last year was certainly a really good media day, I remember. And this one, maybe there aren't that many stories to get our teeth into, really sort of through the spine of the sport. Sometimes you get that one talking point that really gets everybody going. There aren't that many of those. I thought Tsitsipas was good. I mean, we'll come on to them individually, but he was the highlight for me of the ones that I went into. I mean, I remember press conferences in the past where Naomi Osaka was in. And as you say, Nadal was really interesting last year, even coming into the tournament. And he's obviously just not here this time. So it wasn't great today.
Possibly a combination of factors. And for those of you that are still listening, well done. you really are the diehard fans, yeah. Presumably... most of our listeners tuned out over the course of David's answer there.
People probably telling us this will be a snoozy podcast.
The snoozy podcast, that's what we'll call it.
Actually, sometimes people do say, I love listening to your podcast to fall asleep.
My mum says I never know
how to take that. Mm. Is that the greatest compliment possible or actually a huge insult?
I'm going to take that as a compliment, whether or not it's intended.
Yeah, so we started off with Caroline Garcia, mostly in French, few questions in English. Then in terms of I suppose we don't have to do this in men's and women's. We could go chronological.
Go whichever order you like. Oh, I like
chronological. Anyone have anything to say about Garcia? Because that is our starting point if we're going chronological.
The only thing is one of the sort of threads of the media day, and Garcia was asked about it, was this app that the French Tennis Federation have invested in to sort of help protect players against online hate. It's an app with a sort of AI, I don't know what the word is, we're still learning.
I think it's a plugin for your social media apps which filters
out hate messages.
Yeah,
so that
the AI is trained or has learned to detect hate messages,
exactly,
and filter them out.
Yeah.
I don't know how good the tech is. It's obviously good. They're satisfied. It's good enough to serve this function. That was a running theme throughout the day, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, Coco Gauff was asked about that. And, I mean, she seems to have her own systems in place just habitually as to how to handle things. Because she said, you know, I will get messages to my social platforms every single day of my life, every hour of my life, she said, and I have to make sure I know what I want to look at and what I don't. The other thing Caroline Garcia was asked about was the handling of the internal pressure she puts on herself and not putting too much stock in everything, you know, and she said that remains a work in progress. She was honest about that. She has not figured out completely how I'm supposed to play without it meaning the world all the time. And it's one of those really big challenges for an athlete, I think, that you so desperately want to achieve, and we want them to care and to achieve. And yet, in order to do that, a lot of the time they've got to find a way to release that valve and not have that pressure.
It was interesting. She was really playing down the questions about how disappointing her year has been since winning the WTA finals, wasn't she? She was very much like, oh, shrug, that's the ups and downs of tennis, that's sport. And I don't know whether that's a good attitude or a bad attitude. I guess it depends on the player and the personality. There's a part of me that wants to shake her and go, no, Caroline, you don't understand how good you are. you shouldn't be happy with the year you've had so far. You are so good. But there's another part of me that knows that it is a completely unpredictable sport. You know, she's been around the block enough times to know that you can't just click your fingers and produce your best form, and there is no point getting het up about not being able to produce the tennis that she did in Fort Worth week in, week out. I suspect some boring balance of both those things, some snoozy balance of both those things is true. But it was interesting how, not quite dismissive, but how relaxed she was about her year, I thought.
I'm sure there are coping mechanisms, aren't they? And I didn't quite get a chance to ask her my question, which would have been about how different it feels coming into this tournament compared to every other tournament of the year. You know, what does it do to her as she steps out onto that court? I mean, I've seen her have some results here, but it's pretty fraught.
Yeah,
watching her play here. It has been in the past anyway.
It doesn't look fun for her, does it? No. It does not look like she's able to enjoy everything that comes with it.
And they make a fuss of her here, don't they? She's treated as a massive star here.
She's the fifth seed.
Yeah, and she's like on the billboards, isn't she, next to Nadal, who's not here, obviously.
On one hand, I was thinking, gosh, she's getting all these questions in French about can you win Roland Garros and... dreaming about winning Roland Garros, and I'm thinking, I hadn't even considered putting her in the... I haven't gone through the draw. Who knows what will happen? But she wasn't occurring to me big picture in my predictions. And then I thought, if this was Wimbledon and we had a fifth seed, that sure as heck would be the line of questioning the Brits, and it would be the storyline. You know, it'd be a big deal in the papers.
She might well be in my... runners of...
Because there are so many fewer players that are comfortable.
Yeah, and because she just looks... I think the game suits her better, I would have thought, on grass.
I'm definitely not prepared to make mid-range Caroline Garcia predictions.
Wise. I'll let you off on that one, Matt, although you are participating in a podcast where you will have to express some opinions that could age badly. That's the game that we're
that's
in.
What we do.
Stefanos Tsitsipas was next into the room, and I agree with you, David, this was the one where I learnt the most. I didn't necessarily enjoy the press conference the most. I do find Tsitsipas press conferences awkward. He definitely finds taking questions from me awkward. I'm just going to stop trying.
He didn't give a very long answer to it, did
nope.
he?
but I learned a lot.
Yeah,
and I learned a lot that is certainly not encouraging me to pop him in my predictions anywhere.
Arguably, Matt, was that more revealing because he said so little to the question that Catherine asked?
Completely. I think his answer said everything, and I don't know if he's realised how much it says.
What was your question again?
The first question was from you, wasn't it? And it was about Mark Philippoussis. This was the first... time he'd spoken to the press since the news came out that Philippoussis wasn't going to be with Team Tsitsipas anymore, and it was Mark Philippoussis that announced that news, wasn't it? I don't think anything had come out from Tsitsipas on it, and he gave a really, really fascinating answer to you,
very
David.
Very considered. And
very considered. I mean, I think it should be an answer that's alarming to Tsitsipas fans, personally. I didn't find it a very encouraging answer, but it was very open and considered.
The gist of it was that he... Because I wanted to find out who'd made that decision. Philippoussis had announced it, but who made the decision? He described the parting as mutual, as so many people do, but then he made it very clear, really, that it was his decision. That's how it sounded, and that he... finds it stressful to have too many voices on the practice court and in his team. And he was very keen to praise Mark Philippoussis and to express his affection for him and his admiration for him. But at the same time, he didn't want him in his team anymore, is what he was saying. And he needed just one voice, and... presumably, that's his dad.
It seemed to be unequivocal. It seemed to go without saying that that voice has to be Apostolos.
Yeah.
That was the elephant in the room.
Yeah, he said it was mentally draining to have so many different voices around him. And I was nodding along to that. I was like, yes, it does seem very mentally draining to be Stefanos Tsitsipas on court because I've watched it and you look mentally drained. But of course, the element that he didn't say was, you know, has he not considered that one voice being someone other than his dad? Because it feels like his dad is the most mentally draining element. And of course, what happened in Rome, where I don't actually think we talked about this on the podcast, where he was playing Medvedev, and it seemed like he told his mum to leave the box. He also told her to stop speaking in Russian and speak in Greek so that Daniil Medvedev couldn't understand the advice, the comments. And it was basically a sort of, they were having a domestic while Stefanos Tsitsipas was playing a very high-profile match. And you've got these stills of Tsitsipas sitting there on the bench with his father behind him, you know, sort of chuntering away, and his mother sort of distanced from the group. And it was just a sort of sad family scene while Tsitsipas is trying to win a match. And of course, there's an element of tragedy to all of it, really, because I'm sure his parents have the best of intentions. They want the best for him, but it really feels like at the moment they're holding him back, and no one seems to quite be able to see that within the family, it seems.
Yeah, it was really embarrassing what happened in Rome. I really felt for him. It was, yeah, there's no better word. It was extremely embarrassing. It made you wince. I felt so sorry for him because, yeah, of course their intentions are honourable in terms of, you know, wanting the best for their child. But without question, you can't watch that and not think they're getting in the way. You know, the Tsitsipas family circus is getting in the way. He's still a darn good tennis player, but he is not achieving what he thought he would be achieving at this stage of his career. He's not. I don't think he's a better player than when he reached the final here 2 years ago. I think if he has made some technical improvements that aren't quite visible to my eye, then I think they're cancelled out by not having the sparkiness of and freshness of the youth that he used to have. I'm not suggesting he's old, but the youth that
but he's been around for a while.
He's been around for a while.
And he's taken some tough losses. And
yeah, so my question to him was following up on his answer to you, David, saying, well, you've said that, you know, the reason for things ending with Mark Philippoussis is that the situation had become emotionally draining for you. Another situation that was clearly emotionally draining, or no, I didn't put words in his mouth. I said, was what transpired in Rome with your player's box. I didn't reference his family. I mean, obviously we're talking about his family, but I didn't want to make it as sort of pointed as that. You know, that situation with your player's box, what happened in that semi-final, was that emotionally draining? And is it something you think you can prevent happening in the future? And he said, I have no comment. And Matt's just on the same face that he did at the time when he was sitting next to me.
Yeah. And it just moved on from there. And the rest of his press conference was interesting. His reluctance, his refusal to engage with that subject, I'm not that surprised about, I suppose, given what he'd said to me about his decision generally. But he, in saying what he said a lot.
Yeah, there's ways of non-engaging, aren't there? And tennis players have some very wordy ways of politely not engaging, don't they? And I didn't necessarily expect him to say, God, yeah, my mum is such a pain in the arse. She's really holding me back, and I wish she and my dad would bog off.
It's tough. It's really tough to see an obvious way out of this situation.
There was also a line in the press conference where he said he feels like he's at a stage in his life now where he either needs more friends or wants to spend time with friends. And in the past, it had all been tennis, 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 and he sort of neglected making friends, really, when he was younger. And it feels as though now it's almost like tennis isn't giving him everything that he thought it would always give him. And now he sort of hasn't developed that other area of his life. And he seemed a little bit lost, to be honest. Mm. Yeah, it's sad. Because
needs a bit of Unai Emery on the sidelines.
Yes. It took me a little while to get what you were saying there.
Because yes, your mind doesn't instantly go to Stefanos Tsitsipas, massive Aston Villa fan.
No.
Well, it will from now on, David. Unai has
Emery,
told you.
Aston Villa manager, will be delighted to find out that Stefanos Tsitsipas is indeed a massive Aston Villa fan, at which point I rolled my eyes because I hate Aston Villa.
Do we believe he's a big Aston Villa fan?
No. What I think is happening here is that he knows a women's footballer called Alicia Lehmann who plays for Aston Villa. There's been some sort of social media interaction between the two of them. And, hey, I'm an Aston Villa fan. I think that's what's happened.
To be fair, I declared myself a Seattle Seahawks fan out of thin air. But
maybe Tsitsipas has done the read. I was really hoping someone would say, you know, what do you think about John McGinn or something. But didn't look. For a later press conference,
should they have
maybe
played Cameron Archibald? Or
how will you cope with European football next season?
Yeah, look, we'll pop it on the to-do list to really grill Stefanos Tsitsipas on his Aston Villa fandom. Next in was Iga Świątek, defending champion, world number one. First question was about the difference for her between how she feels on the eve of the tournament this year to last year, given that the rivalries that have developed for her over the course of, you know, the first 5 months, five and a half months of this year, and the challenges that she's been posed by Świątek and Sabalenka. And she said that has given her an extra kick of motivation, I think is how she described it. She didn't know until that press conference, until Russell Fuller of the BBC told her she could lose her number one ranking.
That was
this
very
tournament.
Funny.
That was a good moment, wasn't it?
I very much enjoyed the evolution of that question throughout the day for Russell, because he went in with it to Iga Świątek and said, this is a tournament where you could lose your number one ranking. And she clearly didn't know. So it was a funny moment. And Russell sort of said, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to sort of startle you with that fact. When he put the question to Sabalenka a little bit later, he said, how aware are you of the rankings? I thought it was really great.
That's what we do in this trade.
Okay, on the thigh injury, the leg injury that she sustained in Rome, I thought mixed messages. What did you say? She said she's still recovering, but I know I'll be ready for my first round match. And I thought, well, if 10 days on, you're still recovering, how can you absolutely know that in 3 days, you'll be completely fine? I interpreted it as, I'm not going to be perfect for my first round match, but I'm so much better than everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. She beats people so easily.
By the time I need to have two legs, I will have two legs.
Mm. Yeah. I thought the same.
Yeah, because we did hear some reports that on the practice court, you know, she's been hitting well, but not doing an awful lot of moving. I think I had the exact same reaction. Initially, I was like, that's a bit weird. How do you know that you're going to be fine? She's going to be fine enough, I think, in her mind for the first round.
She was asked by Yannick Schneider, it was the German journalist, about the app. And she said, it's a great idea. And she gave some pretty thoughtful thoughts. Oh, that's ironic. What an unthoughtful thought that phrase was. Anyway, she gave some thoughts about, you know, she said, look, I am of the generation where, you know, it's not a choice to use social media. This is how we communicate and how we build relationships and how we move through the world. And it's really sad that the thing that's supposed to make us happy also brings so much trouble and difficulty. And she thought it was a great idea. She also mentioned in that answer, she sort of broadened it out to talk about general improvements at Roland Garros this year. And she said there are more places for the players to nap, which, you know, bully for them. But my campaign Media Nap Pods has been off the ground for some time without any recognition.
It's a scandal.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm right there with you, Catherine, on this crusade.
Mm. Thank you.
Mm.
I think, perhaps the Iggy Świątek snaps are more important.
Sorry? Also, players are not spending 12 to 14 hours on site.
No, they're bloody not, David.
Unless they're really bad at sort of knowing when to arrive for their match.
But they need to, suddenly have energy, don't they? So,
So do we.
If matches run on and,
Let's move on to Aryna Sabalenka.
Well, just a final point on the Iggy Świątek. I thought it was an interesting question from Matt Futterman, picking up on something that we've commented on in terms of that rivalry of, particularly, I think, Iggy Świątek against Aryna Sabalenka, where it has felt like there's a bit of an edge to that match. And, Matt made the point, impossible to ignore what's happening in the world and the war in Ukraine and how outspoken Świątek has been in her support of Ukraine, coming up against a Belarusian in Sabalenka. Is that tension being brought to the court? I thought it was a really interesting question. And her answer did make me think, because she said no. She tries not to make matches personal and she's just focused on what she's doing. And I suppose that is true. One of the elements to Iga Świątek is how sort of ruthless she is against everyone. I remember her playing one of her friends on tour, Kai Juvan. I think it might have been here at the French Open last year. She absolutely crushed her, like 6-love in about 15 minutes in the first set. And she sort of brings that energy to every match that she possibly can. So it did make me reflect a little bit and think perhaps it's more, that sort of tension in that match is perhaps more the other way. Perhaps it's Sabalenka really sort of wanting to beat Świątek. But if they do play again, I'm certainly going to be thinking about that answer from Iga Świątek.
Well, Sabalenka, who was next into press, was sort of asked about tensions with opponents from a slightly more literal angle, wasn't she? Because she faces Marta Kostyuk first round, and Marta Kostyuk has been one of the most outspoken Ukrainian players on her belief that Russians and Belarusians should not be playing on tour, and various other things like greater support that should be offered to Ukrainian players. I don't think anybody expects there to be a handshake in this match that we know will take place on Sunday. They haven't released an order of play, but they've told us which matches will be happening on Sunday, and Sabalenka Kostyuk is one of them. And she was the answer kind of went on a journey, didn't it, Matt? To this one,
yes. I feel like Sabalenka. It's hard because you want players to be authentic and real and react in the moment to questions. I almost feel like she needs a bit of a stock answer, so she knows what she's going to say in response to questions about the war, which very legitimately will keep coming up. And at one point, she made the point, it's absolutely fine, I totally get it if Marta Kostyuk doesn't like me. I understand that. I don't feel anything bad towards her, she said. If I could, I would stop the war. She said that again, which is a phrase that she's used before. But then she sort of keeps talking and ends up saying things like sport and politics shouldn't mix. And I find that to be a disappointing thing to say, sort of lack of awareness, really. I think it's hard that she has to handle those questions, of course, but I suppose I'm just a bit surprised that she doesn't just sort of shut them down a little bit more.
Which Medvedev has learned how to do.
Right.
Maybe he's a little more comfortable in those settings, and he's a very comfortable public speaker generally, isn't he? One other thing that Świątek said about the Sabalenka rivalry and Rybakina rivalry, it's just we don't really have a relationship at all. There's no bad blood between us. We respect each other, but that's it. We don't know each other, is effectively what she was saying, which is kind of unusual, I think, in the locker room in recent years. There's been a lot of palliness.
Yeah. And too much palliness.
Well, I do quite like the fact that these three are just going toe-to-toe and they meet each other when they get out there. And the rest of it is, well, all business.
Yeah. And P.S., Rebecca was supposed to come into press today. She didn't show up and we're none the wiser about why or when we might see her.
Unless she came in after we left, and that was right been, at the end of the media session.
No, because we're on the WhatsApp group, David.
Oh, yes, of course we are. I forgot that.
Yeah, we'd know about it.
Some of us have been on the WhatsApp group since Monday.
Have you already muted the WhatsApp group?
No, I haven't. I mute.
You don't have notifications
generally.
On generally, do you?
I do not want any notification popping up and telling me somebody wants to say something.
Even us.
Yeah. I look when I'm good
Yikes.
And ready.
Yikes. Yeah, which is 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay.
Exactly.
She said she feels Sabalenka like a better player on clay than she's ever been before.
Well, she was rubbish before.
Yep.
Well, she was rubbish here. She's never been good at the French Open.
She was good in Madrid.
She was good in Madrid. She's been good in Stuttgart.
Was she good in Stuttgart?
So Rome wasn't real clay. Madrid wasn't real clay.
No, Rome's real clay.
She's been good in Stuttgart in the past, yeah.
Okay.
She said she feels like she's physically better on clay. She feels like her physicality in her game has improved and that will help her on the clay. I feel like we need a scale. I feel like some players have tried to describe their relationship with clay. Like Medvedev very much friend-zoned clay, didn't he, in Rome, saying he doesn't love it, he's just friends with it now. Dan Evans today said that he and clay have been sleeping in different beds.
Oh, yes. hang on. I see what you're doing here, Matt, and I love it. This could really spice up the snoozy pod. Let's workshop this.
So Sabalenka's relationship with clay... Is she's circling it and eyeing it warily.
Chirpsing? Look, you brought it up, Matt.
I think it's more, they're more threatening.
They're liking
that.
One another on Instagram?
No, I think she's out to... I don't think she wants a...
She's not even...
I've got my eye on you.
She's seen it across a bar and she's gone...
Yeah.
See you around the back.
For a fight or... I don't know what to say. But okay.
Okay.
We're workshopping live, folks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right, let's move on to Coco Gauff and see where this goes. What do we think about where Coco Gauff is? Was she a little bit subdued?
She was thoughtful in there. She's very open about where she is in her life, the stage of life that she's at, and she talks you through it to explain that she's growing up and she's matured again in a year's time. And I it's quite interesting that with her, always the elephant in the room is who's going to ask the question about the forehand. And I was preparing myself to ask it in a way that once the person who did ask it asked it, put it to her, I realised my question was going to be rubbish by comparison, because it was Mary Carrillo who asked the question about the forehand, and she put it so perfectly
and so directly in a way that none of us could pull off. It was perfection, wasn't it? There was a lot in her answer to it, wasn't it? Well, she said,
well, the question was, do you know what the bugs are in your forehand? And when you're on the practice court, how much time are you spending on your strengths versus your weaknesses?
In an hour, what percentage do you spend on your
strengths? And she said, look, we know from the Australian Open, don't we, that she is trying to diminish in her mind how big an issue the forehand is. She's trying to not get the yips on it. You know, you can get into a vicious mental cycle with this. But obviously that doesn't address what we understand is a significant technical issue. It just kind of, in theory, stems the flow, stops it running out of control. But she said, the forehand is something I have to improve on, but on clay especially, I feel like it's one of my weapons. I have the, and then she also made the very astute, interesting point that I hadn't thought of, is at least I have the advantage of knowing where opponents are going to play me. She said, I know, basically saying, I know everyone's talking about my forehand, you know, Badossa said it, didn't she? You know, she said afterwards, obviously the trick is to play to the forehand. The problem is, it works. And the forehand is completely vulnerable to breakdown. And she said, I thought this was quite a telling line at the end of the answer. She said, I feel pretty confident regardless of how others view my game.
She must either really believe that or have to be doing a real job on herself to not be a nervous wreck about it, because it's not just a weak shot, relatively speaking. It is a liability of a shot. It is where you go, and she can't cope.
And the thing is, in tennis, the liability is usually also the weapon. That's kind of how it very often goes, isn't it? The thing that can be your greatest weapon is also the thing that's most liable to break down. Not always. You can have, you know, sort of, I was going to go Casper Ruud's backhand, but maybe that's a bit hard. It's a reliable shot. It just doesn't do any damage, does it? But I think pointing to its capacity to do damage in this case perhaps sort of misses the point. But I do understand why she's doing these mental gymnastics equally.
Yeah. And from the matches I've watched of Gauff on clay this year, it has simply not been a weapon. I would say that was probably true last year, where, you know, let's not forget she reached the final here last year, and she said it was a weapon in terms of jumping up and, you know, it really sort of took off from the clay. And I think that was absolutely true last year. That has not been the case in the matches I've watched this year. It's just broken down. It's just coughed up unforced errors. And she actually mentioned that she felt the last match she played, her backhand was the issue. And I still think that stems from the forehand, because there's no confidence in the forehand, and that bleeds into the rest of her game, I think. And she didn't address the direct nature of Mary's question, do you know what the bug is? You know, she didn't say that, which, you know, fine, she's absolutely entitled to say what she feels comfortable saying and wants to say, but I don't know if she does know the answer to that question.
Certainly I mean, look, she's in a tough section of the draw anyway. Even if she came in, you know, saying the things that we wanted to hear about the forehand, I'm not necessarily sure I'd be doing big things with her in my draw. But she didn't say anything today that changed how I was feeling about my Coco Gauff predictions. Ons Jabeur was next into the room. And it was a very pleasant time, as it always is with Ons Jabeur. Lots of just comfort with being in that room. Lots of personality and twinkle in the eye. Didn't feel like there was anything hugely noteworthy that she said. She gave me a great line, didn't she, I asked her about, you know, losing pretty much before the tournament had started here last year. First match on Châtrier on the Sunday. And by that point, the list had come out of Sunday's matches and she wasn't on it. And she said, "I hate playing on Sundays here. I always lose." She said, "I was very relieved." I wouldn't be surprised if she had requested not to play on that Sunday. So that was a good strong line. But yeah. Anything else?
I guess I was just struck by how different it was to last year, where we felt like we knew what to expect from Jabeur. We felt like she was going to play well. She came in to the tournament in such good form, having won Madrid and reached the final in Rome. And then, yeah, all the air went out of the balloon when she's scheduled first up on Sunday and loses. Here, it feels totally different. Like, I don't really know what to expect from Jabeur or what she said her injury is better, which is encouraging. She played so well in Charleston, which wasn't that long ago, and hasn't been good since.
Is that real clay, David?
Charleston?
Yeah.
Relative
to the law test?
Relative to Roland Garros, no.
I actually agree with that.
I mean, if Roland Garros is unanimously...
Well, nothing's going to be the Roland Garros standard,
yeah.
Is it?
I mean, then it's Rome after that.
It's a problem with I'm a broken record. It's the problem with the women's lead-up events.
They don't have Barcelona. Yeah. They don't have Monte Carlo. Yeah, and Estoril. Yeah, there's a lack of clay court tournaments that really replicate the conditions.
Interestingly, Daniil Medvedev, who was next into the room, and I had my hand up for a question, and it was going to be, you know, Daniil, it was outrageously wet and cold in Rome last week, brackets, I'm still not over it. And it could not be more different in Paris this week. Does that make you falter in sort of your confidence in how it can translate? Does it make it feel like just break the continuum, I suppose? But before I had the chance to answer my question, he started talking about how heavy the balls are this year, which is something that he's been generally speaking complaining about, because he believes it over the course of the year, I mean, because he believes it's leading to more injuries, particularly in the shoulder and elbow area, and he might well be right about that. But he was saying, actually, the heaviness of the balls here, he's hit twice on Châtrier so far, made it feel more like Rome.
Oh.
And he said, in years gone by, that would have been a nightmare for me. I'd have thought, well, I'd like it to be like Madrid, please, or, you know, as unclayey as possible. But why are you surprised, David? You were in the room.
Yeah, no, I was. But I for some reason, I didn't pick up on that line about the similarities to Rome because of the balls. I mean, I was still thinking about his answer to my question before that.
And which
about,
was?
About the confidence levels immediately after that first practice session, because that was the running theme throughout Rome, was that...
David, it was in answer to this that he said the stuff that I just said.
Oh, okay. Maybe I wasn't concentrating that hard. But...
You got a great answer out of him.
Oh,
anyway, carry on.
But it just, you know, that was such an eye-opener, the way he was talking his chances up midway through the tournament. And then he goes and wins it. And he definitely seems in a good frame of mind here again. But he did say, maybe I don't feel quite as good as I did there. So.
My favourite moment of the Medvedev press conference was when he was listing all of the great players that he'd beaten in Rome on clay, and he was like Zverev, Tsitsipas, Runa, and he paused and he went, Bernabe Zapata Moraes.
And then he threw Emil Roussevori in there. He said he got a set off Alcaraz, which was very Reggie. He was winning for a bit. It was great. There was a bit of a burn for Andre Rublev. There was a very brutal question to him about what Andre Rublev wore to his daughter's christening.
Basically, what was he playing at?
Yeah. And bless Daniel Medvedev, he was like, what are you talking about? Andre was dressed fine. He said
he made such an effort to be there.
He was wearing a T-shirt.
Stuck up for him.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was a sweet moment. Those two are cute. Alcaraz was lost in the press conference room.
I was otherwise occupied by Artifis on the screen.
Yeah,
at
David
this
skipped the number one and his potential pick for the title.
I trusted you two, so tell me what.
Well, I'll defer to you, Matt, because you listen to the Spanish portion as well as the English.
Yeah, this was a bit of a snoozy one, I have to say. I think again, it was probably Matt Futterman's question that sort of sparked my main thought about this, and it was how I don't really worry about Alcaraz in terms of adapting to new situations. And the new situation here is number one seed at Grand Slam for the first time, and you know, with Rafael Nadal not here, there's so much more attention on him, particularly in Spain. And I don't know, he just has a way of that all sitting quite lightly on him, or it seeming to sit quite lightly on him, and him still be able to go out and express himself on the tennis court and play electrifying tennis. I don't think about all that baggage going on in his life. I just think about him as a tennis player. And yeah, it made me realize I haven't been thinking about that with Alcaraz. I'm just focused on sort of tennis aspects, whereas For other players, you know, we're talking about Tsitsipas. There's so much else going on that I factor into how they will perform. Whereas Alcaraz, I don't. And yet he's so young. He's number one. He's got huge attention. Just seems to be handling it.
Yeah, it was the question as much as the answer, actually, which gave me a lot, because it
exactly.
I think that's exactly what you're saying. It made me realise something about Alcaraz,
yeah.
Or you know, piece some things together in my mind, and it made me, sorry for this for a moment, man, obviously my brain is in a very succession-y place because it's the finale on Sunday, but it made me think of the line from the last episode, David, that Kendall delivered in his, I'm doing this because we've established that we've lost all our listeners already when we advertised this as a snoozy pod, so indulge me. When Kendall said in his off-the-cuff speech about his father, Logan Roy, he said he was comfortable in every, there wasn't a room in the world he wasn't comfortable in. And that, it was an incredible line of dialogue at the time, and it just got so to the heart of something about a person. And that is how I feel about Carlos Alcaraz. I feel like he could be, you know, in a dive tapas bar in Madrid with his granddad, if he has a don't know anything about his granddad, or he could be, you know, he talked about playing golf today, didn't he? He could be on a swanky golf course, or he could be, you know, Nadal style fishing in Mallorca, or he can be Mr. Showbiz on the biggest tennis court in the world and playing to the crowd, or he can be, you know, signing every autograph for a baying group of fans, or, you know, politely saying goodnight to us who he doesn't know on his way out of Indian Wells. I don't think I've ever seen him look uncomfortable in any room or any setting.
No, I can't either. And it will be interesting to see whether he can maintain that as the years go by, because it can get wearing. For most of these guys, eventually it becomes a lot. And actually, I think that was always a feature of Federer and Nadal, is how lightly they carried all of that. And well, let's be honest, he has his role models there, right there. He's lived his life with them in full view and on TV and also now in person. And so maybe we are seeing the generational effect of what went before.
He did I don't know, sow the seed for a potential doubles partnership with Rafa Nadal at the Olympics next year.
It was one of those,
in English and in Spanish.
It was one of those where there was an accredited journalist asking, you know, very good questions. But he's working for the Olympics. Obviously, the Olympics is going to be in Paris next year, and his job was to go in and ask players about the Olympics, which not everybody really wants. You know, his job is to ask players, would you prefer to win the Olympics than a Grand Slam? Which, on the eve of a Grand Slam, is, you know, a bit of a tough sell. But he did his job very well. And he got a great answer out of Alcaraz about, would you be interested in playing Olympic doubles with Nadal next year?
I can't believe I hadn't thought of that. It's a great idea.
Now it's all I can think about.
Now it's all I can think about.
As well as the Succession finale.
Been a good story if you'd have said no.
Well, but I thought he'd go, well, yes, you know, always, he's a great player, always great to share the court with him, but who knows? But he went, his eyes lit up and he went, oh my goodness, that would be a dream. and we're all thinking, yeah, for us too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, make it so. And that concludes Media Day.
Yeah, snoozy.
Not a sign of things to come from the tournament. We've got high hopes for the tournament, folks. It's going to be good. In terms of matches that are being played on Sunday, we've got Sabalenka-Kostyuk, I mentioned that. Sakari Mukova is on Sunday, isn't it? And Corne-Georgie, those are the three women's matches that jumped out at me. Who are the men kicking things off? Sinner, I think, plays Sunday? No.
No, Rublev and Tsitsipas are the highest ranked men to be playing.
Right. Yeah. And then it'll continue on Monday.
They tend to.
Dynamic content to end on, right in the snoozy pod sweet spot.
I've picked out a few names from qualifying.
Yes, please,
made
Matt.
It through.
Take it away.
I think the story of qualifying really is Luca Puig.
When did we last talk about Luca Puig?
A long time
maybe
ago.
Maybe probably losing the semi-final against Djokovic at Australian Open, or maybe a Davis Cup line.
You have absolutely ticked the boxes, David, because he said that he hasn't felt such good feelings on a tennis court since that 2019 Australian Open semi-final. And he said he hasn't experienced such a good atmosphere since France won the Davis Cup in 2017.
Wow.
And he's given some interviews over the last few weeks talking about how tough it's been. He's been battling depression. He's been battling alcoholism, drinking on his own in the middle of the night, crying in hotel rooms. He's been at a really low ebb. He dropped down to 670 in the world. And anyway, he's been the story of qualifying because he's made it through. We could hear some of the noise while we were recording yesterday, and eventually he won that match. And yeah, it's a great story. He hadn't won a match on the ATP Tour all year. He'd just been playing challengers, really, and he had a 3-win, 4-loss record. So it's kind of come from nowhere. And yeah, such a talented player who just lost his way. So it's a big deal, I think, that he's made it through qualifying. Jerry Sheng is through, now 18 years old. He beat Fabian Marichan along the way. And
who's the guy who beat Alcaraz?
Alcaraz.
That name will be in our end of year quiz, won't it? Or an answer to our end of year quiz.
And Elias Ima beat Yannick Hanfmann, who was another one who had done well in Rome but has not made it into the Roland Garros draw. Ima has ended up qualifying. And Aslan Karatsev, who feels like the most dangerous qualifier, he didn't drop a set. He's made it through as well. On the women's side, Mira Andreeva is probably the name that pops out. Had that great run in Madrid, and she beat the top seed in qualifying, Camila Osorio. Great match yesterday. Very impressive win for her to come through qualifying. Also Taylor Townsend, Elizabeth Mandlik, Fiona Ferro, Brenda Fruvertova joining her sister in the draw. And we watched Clara Towson make it through as well. So lots of notable names.
Mm. Yeah, exciting stuff. This edition of the Tennis Podcast is brought to you in association with On Location, as with all our editions throughout this French Open. They are the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location provide packages via Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours to all of the four Grand Slam tournaments, including the US Open, which is on sale now with fantastic tickets to watch the action throughout the year's final Grand Slam at Flushing Meadows in New York. And hospitality packages to help you kick back and relax with all-inclusive food and drinks in a lounge and rooftop bar in between matches. We have a 5% discount code for Tennis Podcast listeners. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast tours, the number 4 tennis.com/podcast. Click the US Open discount section and enter the code Final Slam for 5% off your ticket and hospitality package. You have until May 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time to get your discount. So just a few more days to get in there. Check out our show notes for the fine print. Also in our show notes are details of how to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. And by becoming a friend, you'll gain access to our Four Musketeers Tennis Relived special that we recorded yesterday. And all of our archived of Tennis Relived and bonus episodes. We'll be doing plenty more of them over the weeks and months to come, including a French Open review show, which feels so far away right now, but of course will be upon us before we know it. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia.
I've got Maisie. Maisie, I tell you, we are at the crossroads of greatness right now. I'm telling you. Artifice carries our hopes in his hands. We believe
he's just got a Cirundolo to get past.
And Darwin's regretting all of his life choices, Matt.
Yeah.
We have our top folks.
Who did he pick? Jill Teichman.
Top folks.
Sorry, Jill.
Top folks.
She's
and
your shooting star.
Top folks. Shush. Top folks and executive producers Jamie, Hannah, and Drew. And we have actually. I was moderately distracted earlier on in this episode by a photo of Billie Jean coming through. Billie Jean, who is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss.
Right.
She's enjoying the sunshine back home.
I don't doubt.
We have shout-outs. I was just about to apologise to everybody who's been unfortunate enough to have their shout-outs on the Snoozy Pod, but fire away, Matt.
Those people are Kate Darling in Oregon.
All right, Kate.
All right, Kate. Like
Kate Makarova, also known as Ekaterina. But Kate was on her Instagram. I can have that.
How do you know that?
I've been on Ekaterina Makarova's Instagram.
It's incredible.
I'm telling you.
Katie McNally. There are tennis Kates, come on.
We always have this. We always end up Katie Swan, Katie Bolter.
Katie O'Brien played Venus Williams on centre court once.
I think I've still won. So.
Thank you, Kate. And sorry we couldn't do better for you.
We've also got Marianne Brooks, who is from Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Cape Cod! Cape Cod makes me think of the film Splash.
Yes, with Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
Oh. Matt, any ideas?
He doesn't know.
Never heard of it. Mermaid.
I don't know the film and I haven't got any tennis Mariannes, I'm afraid.
Marianne, though, thank you so much for being
here. Thank you, Marianne.
And finally, we've got Pamela Kennedy.
Another Pamela?
Pamela is from Edinburgh and she says, "It's always Pamela, never Pam. So unfortunately, I can't pretend the "We love you, Pam" is for me and not Pam Shriver."
However,
we love you, Pamela.
Yeah, Pam has been referred to in very recent history as Pamela.
She has, Pamela Howard Shriver.
Mm.
Yeah, how did that come up?
You're in great company, Pamela.
I can't remember why we started.
Pamela
calling
Anderson
Pamela.
Was always a Pamela, wasn't she?
We did.
I feel like you're both having very separate conversations right now.
I'm trying to juggle both of them
and
I'm trying to present a podcast here and David's running riot.
Sorry. It's the Art of Feast thing. I'm giddy.
Look, congratulations to you, listener, if you've made it to the end of this. We've got 15 more of these to come and we will make efforts for them to be better. Yep. That is our solemn promise to you. Thanks for listening and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.